welcome to Knit Spirit. I'm your host, Ivy Reisner, and this is episode 83, Hanukkah. I've been away from the microphone for a couple of weeks because I had an impacted wisdom tooth, and after it was pulled, I had the stupid lisp every time I went to record. So that's kept me away, but I'm sorry, and I'm back, so let's get started. I think the current Nitty is the best one yet. I'm in love with Pyroclastic. I love the name, I love the faux cables, I love the lace, I love the design. I have the right Lorna's laces in stash to knit it up with. I'm going to do B-stripe. I have a couple of things on the needles, and I do run towards knitting monogamy, and I do really try to be a monogamous knitter, but I'm pretty sure these are going to be cast on really soon. I'm torn on Darcy. I think I mostly love it for the name, and I'm a really firm believer in the sweater curse, and I know the current relationship I'm in, the sweater curse would take full effect, so I might not knit it. It's nice. I'm not sure what to make of Mrs. Roosevelt's. They're plain mittens. I mean, yeah, sure, Eleanor might have knit mittens like that, but so did thousands of knitters before her. There's nothing designed about them. There's nothing unique about them. I like them, and for the historical curiosity, I might knit them, but eh. The double knit Hoover blanket was way, way cooler in a prior issue of Knitty. I just finished knitting a waffle hat using the Unique Sheep's Green Sheep Worsted in SW8K. The photos on my blog, it took just barely under 50 grams for one hat, so I'm pretty sure I should be able to do two. And now here's the fun. I wanted to donate it to charity, but we have three I have relatively easy access to. One gives out items once a year on Christmas Day. Anything donated from December 26th until December 24th waits for that one day when everything goes out. I'm not so sure how helpful that is in New York. One wants to sell hats to buy other hats. They have no pass-through system as far as I know, so they have the stuff that comes in, it all gets sold, the money goes to the people who need stuff, who buy it to distribute it. It's going to end up that I'm going to give them a good wool hat, they're going to sell it and maybe make enough money, if they're lucky, to buy a cheap, flimsy cotton or synthetic hat. Not quite the right way to go with it, so I'm not going to go with them. The last will give out stuff, but here's the trick. The hats and stuff they want to collect and dole out in the summer. And now they want school supplies and non-perishable foods. But they give out food to the homeless twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And they have a homeless shelter, so they do need clothing and they do give out clothing. They just don't have a good resource for accepting donations of clothing. So I've been kind of ninja donating for them, which is a little bit weird, but it's working. Also on the needles right now, and continuing my obsession with Unique Sheep yarn, I have the Sunday Swing socks from a prior issue of Knitty with Lux in Summer Rose. I have the first sock done, and I'm just about finished with the cuff of the second sock, and I'm loving the pattern. It's another lace pattern sock. It's really easy. Once you get the setup row done for the whole chart, then you just run an autopilot. You're just decreasing one earlier than you did the previous time and yarning over one earlier than you did the previous time and so on until you're ready for the next full repeat of the chart. It goes really, really fast, and I love the way the color is working up for this. And finally, I have one UFO. And that's the Lizard Ridge blanket. Let's not speak of that sweater. That sweater is just sitcom chic. It's just not going to happen. I've hidden it in the back of my closet, and I'm going to try to pretend it doesn't exist. I have one UFO, and that's the Lizard Ridge blanket. I want to get it done. I'm probably going to sneak in the mittens from the latest Six Kingdoms Club before I do the blanket. They're a stranded knitting pattern, and they're really gorgeous. I'm in love with them. And I'm probably going to sneak in a hat. Jane made a comment that absolutely cracked me up on her blog on how hats aren't supposed to be made by knitting squares and then sewing them together. You know, mitered knitting. So I have it in my head to knit a checkerboard hat exactly that way. The photo and the patterns, if I do this, are going to go up on my blog probably this week or next. I love how just about every rule in knitting is made to be broken. There's a bazillion right ways to do everything. It's one of the great things. And really, in its simplest form, a hat is just a square that's been gathered up on top. Well, a rectangle that's been gathered up on top sometimes. And we're just about out of Hanukkah now. And this is the traditional Jewish festival of lights. It's a really, really minor holiday, but it's a lucky one. Hanukkah is kind of the Jewish calendar's equivalent of Groundhog's Day in its importance. It's there. It's on the calendar. It's almost completely insignificant. It lucks out by falling right around Christmas and gains prominence through that closeness on the calendar. And that's the theme of the Bible. The smaller raised high. David defeats Goliath. The meek second-born Jacob usurps Esau's position and blessing. Isaac succeeds his father and becomes the patriarch despite having a stronger brother in Ishmael. And there is some discussion that Abraham might have preferred Ishmael. There is a midrash, and to some extent Islam supports it as well, that Abraham was uncertain at the time of the binding of Isaac, which of his sons he was to sacrifice. It makes little sense for it to be Isaac, as Isaac was to be the vehicle through which Abraham's seed would spread, yet Isaac had not at this juncture bore children. That's why Islam says it was supposed to have been Ishmael. The midrash treats this incident as if we're only getting God's half of the conversation, we're not hearing Abraham's. Genesis 22:2, as written, says, "And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son, whom thou lovest, even Isaac, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." Genesis 22, with both sides, per the midrash, "Take now thy son." Which son? "Thine only son." I have two only sons. I have an only son by Hagar, and I have an only son by Sarah. "Whom thou lovest." I love them both. They're both my sons. "Even Isaac." The midrash further holds, this is to prove to Abraham that he honestly loves Isaac as much as he does Ishmael. I'm going to be a little obnoxious here. Certain Hasidic groups have claimed that the binding of Isaac was a punishment for Isaac's casting Ishmael and Hagar out on Sarah's request. But in order to make this assumption, one must ignore the fact that Abraham refused Sarah's request, and God had to step in saying, "Hearken unto Sarah's voice." Abraham cast them out because God told them to. It is curious that neither at that point nor at the binding of Isaac does Abraham try to argue the point as he did with Sodom. Biblical scholar Tikva Frymer Kensky claims that the angel sentence at the end should not be translated as, "For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son from me, but indeed I know you are a God-fearer, but you have not held back your son from me." In other words, confusion. Why would Abraham, a man that holy, agree to such a hideous thing? As others have said before, this isn't called the testing of Abraham, or the sacrifice of Isaac, or the saving of Isaac. It's the binding of Isaac. To what is he bound? I'm going to argue this binds him to his destiny. From here, God does not speak again to Abraham. The transition has happened, and Isaac has become the patriarch at this moment. It's not a destiny he chose, but we see it's not one he resents. He and Ishmael attend Abraham's funeral later. And I'm going to say this has got to be the most awkward family gathering in history. But in any case, the theme of the Torah is that the smaller raised high, and so with Hanukkah. The smallest, most insignificant holiday is the best known Jewish holiday. I always find it remarkable how this holiday is so good at keeping God first. The Maccabees scored a critical military victory against the stronger, better organized, better armed Seleucid Empire. Again, the small rising against the great. When the Jews were oppressed and Judaism was outlawed, these rebels rose up, freed our people and our land, and we almost never speak of the battle. We don't speak of the conditions that led to them fighting. We don't speak of how they ruled Israel for over a century. We don't speak of how they restored Jewish practices. We just focus on the candles, the lights, the one blessing God gave to sanctify what they had done. I'm mixed on this holiday. I like the candles. I think they're beautiful. I like looking at them. I like the two symbolisms that it raises. First is that we are bringing the light of Torah to the world, so we shine the light of the menorah as well. That's why traditionally the menorah is kept in the window, to shine it out into the world. And it's traditionally in its correct orientation if you're looking at it from outside. I like the idea that ties into many ancient cultures of bringing back the light. If you look at any culture that has waxing and waning days, when it gets close to the time when you have the shortest days, there's going to be a ritual, a tradition, a something that involves making stuff glow. If you look at North America today, that would be Kwanzaa, Christmas with all the lights on the Christmas tree, and Hanukkah. And ancient societies did this as well. It is a fear of the dark days, a hope for the light days, and just a spiritual and metaphorical and almost sympathetic magic of bringing back the light. I think that's why the tradition isn't to light a bunch of candles for 8 days. It's to light one candle, then two, then three. That ever-increasing light is another form of bringing back the light. The downside is the candles, because I'm a pyrophobe. And I'm good for the first 4 days because the way you light the candles is you start with a shamash. That's the helper candle. Its purpose is twofold. It lights the other candles, and there's a commandment that you're not allowed to use the Hanukkah lights for any mundane purposes. So if you happen to luck into having something lit by the menorah, you can say, oh, it's the shamash, the non-holy shamash is light that's spreading it. So that's showing whatever it is. So you can kind of get away with it that way. But when you light it, you light the shamash and then use the shamash to light the new candle, whatever the new day is, and then start with one and work your way through. And when it's up to the fourth day, I can come in from the other side of the menorah and put the candle down and not have a problem. Once I get to the fifth day, I have to put a lit candle between two lit candles. And this freaks me out. I panic. I make somebody else do it. I just cannot tolerate doing that. So I'm too cowardly to light my own menorah. I admit it. And I kind of wish the rabbis would decide that the electric menorah is kosher. I mean, come on. If electricity is a fire on Saturday, why can't it be a, you know, we're not allowed to use it because that would be kindling a fire. Why can't we say electricity is a fire for Hanukkah? I mean, it is or it isn't. Let's make this decision, guys. But no, it is half the time. And it's always the half the time when you don't want it to be. So have a very happy Hanukkah, a very Merry Christmas, a delightful Kwanzaa, a wonderful New Year. Whatever you're celebrating may be spectacular. Have a healthy and a happy 2010. And until next time, be blessed and keep knitting.